This is BBC Radio 3. And under glorious blue skies, later tonight we're going to be off to Wiltshire and the Chalk Valley History Festival, where we'll find the Freethinking in Summer team considering how history shapes our lives. In the chair, Anne McElvoy, talking to a man steeped in the love of the history of his own life, who never fails to bring some reference to it in his many outspoken statements, made in the capacity as the Mayor of London. Boris Johnson talks about history and how it's shaped his career tonight on Radio 3 at 10 o'clock. Then the new director of the Donmar Warehouse continues our series of essays on the art of direction, reflecting on how a mistake early on in the process can produce catastrophic results. It's all in the planning, as you'll hear, at a quarter to 11 tonight. But now, with the time at 7:30, years of planning are about to take to the air. The BBC Proms 2013 are about to launch. It's Proms Preview Night, and we're joining Petroc Trelawney, where it's all about to happen over the next 2 months. The Royal Albert Hall. Petroc.
Ian, thank you very much indeed. I'm looking out over an amazing sight. 500 musicians together on stage, 100 members of the BBC Symphony Orchestra, dressed down this evening, saving the tales for tomorrow. Behind them, nearly 150 singers from the BBC Symphony Chorus and more than 250 members of the BBC Proms Youth Choir. It is a packed platform here at the Royal Albert Hall. Baritone Roddy Williams is singing at the moment. Zachary Oramo is on the rostrum rehearsing Ralph Vaughan Williams's A Sea Symphony, which forms a sizeable part of the first night of the 2013 Proms. And that first night is tomorrow. It's Proms Eve, the night before Christmas for music lovers. Feast of riches lies ahead, intense experiences to accompany sun-dappled summer evenings. Great artists, great orchestras coming to London to taste the unique enthusiasm offered by the Proms audience. Treasured musical works getting another close-up examination. New commissions blinking their way into the daylight. Well, I'm in the Radio 3 box here at the Royal Albert Hall at the moment. We'll be here live at least once every day between now and September the 7th, broadcasting every prom live. I'm going to go backstage now to the corridor that runs right the way around the back of the stalls here at the Royal Albert Hall, our home for the evening, as we celebrate what's ahead in the next 8 glorious weeks of music making. No shortage of Wagner in what is his bicentennial year, as Daniel Barenboim brings a ring cycle to the Proms. And to start our Proms preview night, he conducts one of music's grandest rides. Thank you. Ride of the Valkyries from Die Walküre. Daniel Barenboim conducting the orchestra and chorus of the Bayreuth Wagner Festival. His ring cycle with the Staatskapelle Berlin, starting with Das Rheingold a week on Monday, the 22nd of July. Seven complete Wagner operas in this year's prom season. Do we take it, I wonder, that Roger Wright, director of the BBC Proms, is a Wagner fan? Are you?
Yes, I am, but I don't think that's the point, in a way. Having the anniversary this year means that it was a great opportunity for us to celebrate his work, and not least because of this remarkable sort of golden age that we're in at the moment as far as Wagner conductors and Wagner singers are concerned.
It's a great bargain, isn't it? I mean, you can come and see an entire ring cycle, be in the best position in the hall, and you pay £20. It was £1,000 to sit in the same place at Covent Garden last year.
I've stopped some people in the audience referring to it as the people's ring. But there is that sense, I think, that it does reflect what the Proms is about, which is about giving this extraordinary opportunity, same as the vision from 1895, you know, the best possible classical music to the largest possible audience. And that ring cycle bargain is a perfect example of that.
Now, there will, I'm sure, be 6,000 people packed into the Royal Albert Hall for all four of those performances, as there will be for the first night tomorrow for Doctor Who over the weekend. But this evening, we're forgetting really about the audience here and thinking about the Proms' much bigger audience, the millions of people who will listen in over the next 8 weeks, every concert here on Radio 3, but on BBC television, mainly BBC 4, but right across all the networks. On Radio 2, One Extra, Six Music, Asian Network this year as well. When you plan the Proms, how much do you take in mind that home audience?
Oh, well, I think, you know, of course you start from the position of, you know, what will sound well in the Royal Albert Hall, what will be right for Cadogan Hall, what's right for late night concerts in the hall. But we're always mindful of the fact that this is, in the end, an international festival, not just by virtue of the performers and the composers, but by virtue of the fact that the largest audience is the broadcasting, the one that's receiving the broadcasts. And so, you know, the fact that this is now this huge international festival which reaches a global audience through broadcast is probably the single biggest change in the Proms history, and the sort of audience that Henry Wood and Robert Newman, when they were creating the festival 118 years ago, could only ever have really sort of dreamt of and probably never really imagined.
And it really is millions now, isn't it?
It is, and I'm actually struck in these days of sort of the build-up to the first night. You know, we do a lot of work with fellow broadcasters, you know, from, for example, all the public service broadcasters in the European Broadcasting Union. And I'm constantly astonished about the numbers of broadcasts of the Proms that they take. So, you know, it's not just about the audience that is in the hall, the audience listening to Radio 3 every night, but the way in which that broadcasting offer then extends internationally through lots of other broadcasters, and also, crucially, internationally online. So that opportunity to hear in great sound now online every single Prom is a real way in which, you know, the BBC now running and funding the Proms actually has really built through technology this new audience.
Now, you are often unwilling to offer favourites on these Proms preview nights because, of course, we assume every Prom is a favourite. But I did notice a couple of newspaper interviews this week. You did pick out one or two concerts. Tell us about them very briefly. One of them was Richard Hills giving a fantastic Prom of light music on Bank Holiday Monday. The other, Mitsuko Uchida returning to the Prom after 20 years. How did that come about?
Well, it was just one of those happy coincidences. Mitsuko Uchida is, frankly, normally not available over the summer because of her teaching and other playing commitments, most notably in Marlborough in the States. And so, you know, when the opportunity to have Marius Janssens and Bavarian Radio came up, and miraculously, this was something which had clearly worked in Mitsuko's diary, then it was just too good an offer to resist.
And presumably she could have played whatever she wanted.
I think it's very dangerous of me to say anything about artists playing whatever they wanted, because, of course, one of the great juggling acts that we've got is, you know, it will be the law of you-know-who that whatever Mitsuko wanted or was able to do that day would, of course, clash with somebody else. But these are very, very special artists.
10 seconds on Richard Hills.
Well, a perfect bank holiday afternoon, really, and wonderful to be able to celebrate in the way that Richard does. The range that the Albert Hall organ can offer us. So that's going to be really a fun afternoon.
Well, lots of anniversaries to mark this year, as we will hear across the next few hours. We've talked about Wagner, Verdi, George Lloyd, Luther Swasky, and Benjamin Britten. You've asked us to play the Storm Interlude from Peter Grimes, which will be performed in full tomorrow, all four pieces, and of course Billy Budd here at the Proms on August the 27th. For now, Roger, we'll talk to you again later, but thank you very much indeed for now.
Thank you.
four C interludes by Benjamin Britten from Sakari Oromo and the BBC Symphony Orchestra tomorrow night. That recording by the BBC Philharmonic, conducted by Edward Gardner. First night of the Proms live on Radio 3 at 7:30. Coverage starting on BBC 2 at 8 o'clock. BBC 4 leads Proms TV coverage this year. Great Orchestras of the World every Thursday night. Popular concerts on Friday nights. And 20th Century Music, introduced by Tom Service, every Sunday night. Well, as you can hear in the background, Sakari Oromo rehearsing a C symphony ready for tomorrow night's first night. When he chooses to break the orchestra, we will chat with him, find out about his debut as chief conductor of the BBC Symphony Orchestra. And in a moment, two other great musical figures join me to discuss their Proms highlights. Also this evening, Proms reporter Georgia Mann will be out and about, finding out about the logistics of the Proms takeover of this great Victorian hall and meeting those who ensure the place is ready for the soloists, conductors, singers, orchestral musicians and audience members it'll be hosting. Let's join Georgia now.
So I've descended down to the backstage area at the Royal Albert Hall, and it really is a rabbit warren of corridors and stairways, and it always seems very dimly lit, even when all the lights are on. As you approach the stage, up the appropriately named Bull Run, you'll notice a little, not very glamorous room on your right-hand side, and this is, in fact, the nerve centre of the Proms. In it, throughout most of the season, in fact, all of it, you will find project managers Helen Heslop and Anthony Clements, who I'm paying a visit to. Now. So we're on the eve of the season. How are you both feeling with it just hanging beautifully over you both?
Very, very excited. I've been doing this for a very long time, but it's every time you get that buzz.
Absolutely, and there's been so much planning going into this, and now it's here, so very excited.
And I was going to ask about the planning side of it, because I imagine something like the Proms, its enormity, but also the fact that it involves the diaries of the major world national orchestras, must mean you're working very in advance. I mean, how long have you been working on making this particular season come together?
I sort of get focused once one Prom season is finished onto the next straight away, and then Anthony and I start working together probably about January, isn't it?
I'd say it's about January we start working together. I don't speak to orchestras until a lot closer to the time. I leave that to the BBC.
Because you're based at the Hall, aren't you, Anthony? You're based here at the Royal Albert Hall.
Yes, I coordinate the team, the show department team that helps get the hall ready for the BBC and hopefully keeps it running smoothly.
With this particular Prom season, what are the biggest, most complex concerts that you're tackling this year? What are the ones that are making you quake in your boots ever so slightly?
Urban Classic is a very, very big challenge.
This is all brand new, isn't it?
It is, and it's the first time we've got a simultaneous broadcast with Radio 1, One Extra, and BBC 3 TV and Radio 3. So that in itself is a challenge, as well as the huge event that actually will happen on the stage. So that's one of the biggest challenges, I think, along with the Ring Cycle.
And for you, Anthony?
I think the Ring Cycle actually is one of the big challenges, particularly having a number of other orchestras coming in between as well, and trying to get all these rehearsals in. But it's all going to be very easy, I'm sure.
It's all going to be fine, he says, looking at me, nodding his head determinedly. Yes, yes, it's going to be fine. Yes, you're right, it is.
Well, it all seems fine and dandy right now, I have to say. Mad first weekend, though, with Doctor Who. Very complicated set to get in and out again. They've got a rehearsal for that tomorrow morning, then strike the place ready for the first night with the BBC Symphony Orchestra. Television camera positions changing for each show. Whew, wouldn't like to be in charge of all that. We will hear more from Georgia Mann as the evening progresses. 8:09, we're live here at the Royal Albert Hall on Proms Eve, and I'm delighted to welcome the first of my two distinguished guests tonight, the singer and vocal coach Mary King. Welcome, Mary, to the Royal Albert Hall.
Thank you very much.
Dare I say this, because it could be seen as being ungentlemanly, but this year marks the 29th anniversary of your first Proms appearance.
Isn't that extraordinary? Yes, it's all blur. Actually, I can remember that very, very well. It was a serenade to music.
Last night?
Yes.
1984.
Vaughan Williams.
What did you feel?
Terrified, actually. It's very exposed and in a great big place. Doing a piece of music that's so delicate is very, very, very scary, I have to say.
Was it a sort of career benchmark, though, a Proms debut?
Well, I suppose it was, because I had been coming since the mid-70s and I'd prommed, and it used to be one of the highlights. I think a lot of people say this, you know, I'd get the booklet and I'd start to market very assiduously. I suppose I couldn't quite believe I was here on the other side of the Proms, yeah.
And before that, was it Proms on the radio when you were growing up? Do you remember those?
No, didn't really do that. Came here, you know, when I was studying, yeah. No, I came and prommed, and it's all a blur. I heard so much, so I couldn't possibly tell you what the first one was, but I heard a lot of Debussy, I can tell you that. And I remember hearing Jesse Norman sing The Death of Cleopatra, the big Berlioz Scena, and being just overwhelmed and thought I would die of joy of Berlioz.
Yes, I remember her singing here in one of the first years. I was presenting the prompts for Radio 3, and her voice, you know, really fills this space magnificently. Now, you are busy this year encouraging the vocal talents of Proms audiences.
That's right. There's a series called Proms Plus Sing, where we invite members of the audience, a prospective audience, to come and actually get a little vocal before the event. And what I do is I look at various pieces that are coming through the season. I'm looking at the Brahms Requiem. I'm looking at Britten as a word setter, so looking at various different compositions of his. I do something for The Last Night, and I do the Verdi Prom, one of the Verdi Proms. So it's a real mixed bag.
We've got this Walt Whitman floating through these corridors backstage, Vaughan Williams setting his words for a C symphony. When you hear this number of people singing, I mean, anyone wants to sing when they see that, don't they?
Well, I think it's true, and I think also, you know, with a choir this size, I mean, it's hundreds and hundreds of... it's about 300 or something, 400. And a real mix of ages and experiences, vocal experiences. It's completely thrilling. The sound is so fresh and bright. It's brilliant.
Well, let's talk about one of the strands of the Proms this year. Cadogan Hall, Proms Chamber Music, Monday lunchtime, Saturday afternoons as well. Much more intimate atmosphere, obviously, than the Royal Albert Hall. Give us a couple of your highlights.
Well, again, there's quite a lot of fantastic singing. I mean, Sophie Bevan, who's one of my favourite sopranos, she's doing some Handel cantatas. Sarah Connolly is doing Britten's Phaedra. And Ben Johnson is doing the Serenade for Tenor, Horn and String. So that's, you know, there's a lot on.
And the Wellgas Ensemble as well, who are going to be performing Polish Renaissance music.
Well, that's it. And I'm really excited about this. There's a sort of mini Polish theme, isn't there? But this music is music I don't know at all. It's absolutely fantastic to have the opportunity to hear so much of it.
Well, on August the 5th, the Norwegian trumpet star Tina Ting Helset will bring her ensemble Tenting to the Cadogan Hall for a programme that includes Grieg, Weill, and the premiere of a new work by Diana Burrell. And there's Bizet on the programme too. Thank you. Tina Ting Helseth's group Tenting and Bizet's Carmen Suite. They perform on the 5th of August at Cadogan Hall in a Proms chamber music concert, and Tina Ting Helseth herself will give a new piece by Matthias Pinscher at the Proms on the 18th of August. The rehearsal for the first night of the 2013 Proms has just broken. Filing past us backstage here, members of the BBC Proms youth chorus drawn from the Halle, the CBSO singers from Belfast, from Wales as well. And I'm delighted to say we've been joined now by Stephen Huff, who will be performing not one but two concertante works for piano at tomorrow night's first night. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you, Petrarch.
I introduced Mary by commenting on the anniversary of her first appearance. You're a year later. It was 1985 you played for the first time.
That's right, and my short pants were, I think, very elegant on that occasion. It seems an awful long time ago. Let's not talk any more about it.
Well, tell us what you played.
I played the first Liszt concerto, if I remember, with a Halle Orchestra and Skrovachevsky conducting.
And how was it as an experience? How did it feel?
It was great. Actually, it's become more difficult over the years. I think when you're young, things you don't realise the impact of how many people are listening at home. And, you know, it's just something that you do and you it sort of all fits in. But then as you come back each time, the sort of impact of the Proms seems to get bigger in a sense.
Well, it's great to have you with us, Stephen. You're going to be here through until 10 o'clock and with some favourite Proms selected from the rich catalogue. And we're going to have a little look at the late night Proms next, because, Mary, there is, you've sung lots of times at late night proms, and there is a different atmosphere, isn't there, when the lights are down late in the hall?
Yes, I think there is. I've done some Ligotin, I've done some Hentzer, and the audiences are without doubt, I suppose, on those occasions anyway, smaller, but very, very intense and very appreciative and very, you know, hair down, laid back. Kind of feeling. It's very different. It's rather wonderful.
And a sense of experimentation being allowed.
Well, I think that's true. And we've had world music proms. You know, we've had all sorts of things that are not, if you like, the usual classical music oeuvre.
I remember being at late night proms with actually a very small audience, you know, maybe 1,000 people, which in most concert halls would be absolutely enormous, would pack them out. But here, of course, the place looks completely deserted. And yet I remember one with the BBC Singers in an audience of that size, people lying around, this extraordinary atmosphere that came through the air.
Yeah, I remember a performance of Stimmung here when that was the case. And it just so atmospheric, and the building is so completely extraordinary. I think that it can take anything. You know, it can take empty, it can take full. It's fine.
Stephen, I know one of the late night proms you're looking forward to is a new piano concerto by a fascinating American musical maverick.
Yes, the Zhevsky premiere of his piano concerto. I'm not sure how old he is now, but he's
75,
I think. I knew he was in his 70s. Very interesting man. The piece I know, of course, is The People United Will Never Be Defeated, his big set of variations. But I don't think any of us know what to expect, because he's such an eclectic musician that this piece could be any number of styles, and all of them all together, probably.
And in the style of Rachmaninoff and others, he'll be playing it himself as well with the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra and Ilan Volkov. A late night prom choice from you, Mary?
Absolutely. My top tip is Naturally Seven. They are my favourite vocal group. They are an a cappella group who defy description. Imagine having a big band at the same time as a symphony orchestra and madrigals and gospel all wrapped in one. They are absolutely fantastic.
Well, the first late night prom of the season is on Tuesday. The first ever gospel prom. Spirituals as part of a fight for freedom. The links with funk and rock. The question of what gospel music means today. Here are two of the choirs taking part. In a moment, the London Community Gospel Choir perform My Soul Says Yes. First of all, the London Adventist Chorale, conducted by Ken Burton in David Pearman's arrangement of the traditional Joshua.
Love them, grandpas, let them sound.
The battle is in mine.
My Soul Says Yes, Patrick Henderson, arranged by Howard Francis, the London Community Gospel Choir, before it the London Adventist Chorale, conducted by Ken Burton, Joshua, traditional, arranged by David Pearman, and the Gospel Prom Tuesday night, the first late night prom of the 2013 season. Well, I've left our backstage corridor to come to another long corridor at the lower level of the Royal Albert Hall, just facing onto the Bull Run, the walk through for conductors and soloists as they make their way out onto the platform. Musical instrument cases, some of them made of metal, some of them made a rather splendid wicker, lining this corridor. And here is Zachary Oromo, chief conductor of the BBC Symphony Orchestra. I suppose really we should say chief conductor tomorrow, because tomorrow will be your debut.
Indeed, tomorrow will be my debut in my new role, yes.
And what a start, the first night of the proms, with the last night, I suppose, the two greatest events in the British classical music calendar.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a great honour to be doing this, and I'm especially happy about the programme tonight.
Tell us why.
Tomorrow night, should I say.
Well, tonight as well for rehearsal.
Tonight, okay. Because it's a really great prom starter programme. It's got a short new piece commissioned for this occasion, which I think is fantastic, Julian Andrews' harmony. It's got some brilliant solo piano music by Rachmaninoff and Lutoslavsky. It's got Benjamin Britten, who is one of my all-time favorite composers. And it's got a C symphony by Vaughan Williams. All of this is kind of, I don't know, it's such a varied program. It's in perfect balance, and it suits this first night of the proms idea perfectly.
I think Vaughan Williams would have appreciated the scale of the performance, because you've got 400 singers.
450, I've been told, but I think they're probably just giving me slightly too big numbers. But yeah, I mean, this is a piece that is kind of about community, and it suits very well for a very big choir. And I wouldn't actually want to try it with a smaller choir here in Albert Hall.
Does sound absolutely wonderful. Julian Anderson, an old friend from Birmingham days where you collaborated together, and Stephen Huff, who's with us tonight in our proms preview night, giving his favourite choices. You recorded the Saint-Saëns concertos together.
We spent hours and hours in the studio together doing the Saint-Saëns, and I'm still like incredibly happy that it came around and that I could do it with him and with the CBSO. But indeed, I mean, it's always great in this business to see old friends and to make music with them, or their music.
Now, you made your Proms debut in 1999. You then came every season for 9 years. Those were the days when you were music director of the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra. I wonder, do you think, you may not be able to answer this yet, but do you think there's a difference coming here with a guest orchestra like the CBSO and performing here with the mainstay of the Proms that the BBC Symphony Orchestra are?
Well, I mean, it is an advantageous position which I'm in now because we get to choose the repertoire first. And it's a big difference because, of course, it's a really big festival and I appreciate totally the sort of difficulty of putting together a program for such an event. And everybody wanting to do pieces and you know, you often end up doing pieces that you don't think you're going to do. And now in this position, I can kind of be there always from the very beginning when a certain year's Proms is being planned, and I have can kind of pick my own choice of works. So it's a big difference.
Well, a big welcome for you from the orchestra when you came on for the beginning of the rehearsal earlier. We'll let you go and have a cup of tea. Will that be what you're doing for the remainder of the break?
Yes, I drink tea without milk, but that is absolutely it, yes.
We'll make sure someone's getting you one. Thank you very much, Zachary Oromo. We look forward to tomorrow night's first night, and thank you for talking to us this evening. Also here backstage, two members of the BBC Symphony Chorus who are also mainstays of this great festival. Katie Deakin, soprano, Alex Bates, who is a tenor. Welcome to both of you. How much preparation has gone into to our first night for tomorrow?
An immense amount, as always, every year. Committed lots of rehearsals, usually 2 to 3 times a week, and extended hours.
There's quite a lot of competition, I think, in London amongst orchestra choral societies for who gets the best singers. The London Philharmonic Choir want you, or the London Symphony Orchestra Chorus want you. I guess the BBC Symphony Chorus does have the advantage of the Proms.
I think so. It's definitely what drew me to singing with the BBC Symphony Chorus, because we saw the advert in the Proms programme. We decided, yeah, we'll go for that. The Proms is a good stage, and we've liked singing in the Albert Hall, so it's a really nice stage to sing on.
What's it like to perform out there? It is a building that absolutely suits these great choral works, isn't it?
It's a real thrill. I don't quite know how to describe it. It really is a really good pleasure to be out there on stage in such a magnificent building, and the space helps and lends itself to the music, especially the Vaughan Williams. It's just a real honour to be here doing this. And to have it broadcast to so many people is just something very special.
Yes, do you think about that, Katie, when you're performing, the millions who are going to be watching on the television, listening on the radio, listening around the world on American radio, Australian radio, on the internet?
Yes, no, it's a huge thing. I mean, even singing the choir, I know people say it's all about being on telly, but it's also the love of the music. But the fact there are so many people listening and thoroughly enjoy it. I have friends all over the world who tune in and listen to it. At the end of the day, it's the biggest musical performance for the summer, and everyone and all people can enjoy it from all over the world.
And were you a prommer before you became a prom performer like Alex?
I was, yes. I used to queue up with my champagne picnic on the steps for hours and hours, and it's quite surreal being on the other side, actually, but I think I actually enjoy it being on the chorus side.
Have a fantastic first night tomorrow. Thank you both very much indeed for talking to us. Katie Deakin and Alex Bates, two members of the BBC Symphony Chorus, thank you. And let's hear as a taster of what's ahead tomorrow, the scherzo from the Sea Symphony, The Waves, London Philharmonic Orchestra Choir, Sir Adrian Bolt conducting. Ralph Vaughan Williams.
Yeah.
The scherzo, The Waves, from Ralph Vaughan Williams, A Sea Symphony. The London Philharmonic Choir and Orchestra, conducted by Sir Adrian Bolt. Zachary Oramo will conduct the full work in the second half of the first night of the 2013 Proms, live from 7:30 tomorrow here on BBC Radio 3. The performance, whether you're here in the hall or watching on television, will look stunning as well as sounding magical, all part of the lighting design around the season, which aims to catch the atmosphere of the music, whether it's 500 performers on the first night or a small vocal ensemble just filling a tiny corner of the stage late night. In the next of her Proms postcards, Georgia Mann finds out how it's done.
Bernie Davis is the man responsible for designing the lighting for the Proms, but he's also lit up everything from the Royal Wedding to the BAFTA Awards. And I've ascended here at the Albert Hall to meet him, to give you an idea of quite how high up I am right now. To my right-hand side are the tops of the pipes of the organ. Bernie, first of all, we're looking down, dizzyingly down, at something called the canopy, which is pretty crucial to what you do. Tell me, what is that strange structure?
Well, the canopy comes in three sections. It was put in as part of the acoustic improvements back in the 1960s. The hall famously had very bad acoustics. And the canopies helped to push the sound out to the audience and also down to the orchestra. And in between the three panels, there are truss sections, sort of girders that we attach our lights to as well. So we put our lighting rig into that and then have to set the canopies to suit the acoustics of the hall.
I mean, we're looking at it at the moment and it's suspended beneath us, but this is going to be raised at some point today as we approach the big first night. What happens at that moment? Do all these, I'm looking at lots of chains suspended that are holding it. I mean, does somebody give them a great big pull and something happens?
Sort of, yes, but a little more technical. Up in the roof, above the aluminium domed skin of the roof, there are electrical motors which are attached to the massively strong structure of the Albert Hall roof. It was built in days when people built railway stations, and it's a very, very large, strong structure. So those motors have chains attached to them, and a single controller can turn all the motors on and drive the canopy up to height. So we have to get it to an exact height to suit the event.
Just how much stuff and equipment are we talking?
Well, the rig, by the time it's all in, it probably works out as over 1,000 lights spread around the hall, mostly centred around the stage, but not entirely, because I have to light the audience, all the columns, all the mushrooms, everything gets lit.
And there's some ridiculous statistic relating to the sheer lengths of cable, I believe, that go into this.
Yes, if you add up all the cable that's doing this, it goes approximately twice round the Earth, but we don't tell you which angle of latitude that's at.
Bernie Davis, lighting man extraordinaire, talking to our reporter Georgia Mann. Stephen Huff, much relieved to hear of the strength of the Royal Albert Hall roof. Occasionally people have to rehearse their pianists, in particular wearing hard hats. Have you ever had to do that?
Yes, I had a yellow one on 1 year, just trying the piano, not actually doing a full rehearsal, but yeah.
Now, one of the focuses every year in the Proms is a look at a particular artist and a particular stream of repertoire. Britain, in a big way this year, because it is the Britain centenary. Mary, a few Britain highlights from you.
Yeah, it's fantastic, actually, because as well as Billy Budd, which is, you know, the Glyndebourne production, which is marvellous, there's quite a lot of brilliant vocal music. The Canticles, a couple of the Canticles, Abraham and Isaac, with James Gilchrist singing, and Phaedra, Sarah Connolly, is doing. And then there's also Sinfonia Di Requiem and The Building of the House, which is not very often heard, I think. So it's a real mix of stuff that people know, maybe, and more unusual things. It's wonderful.
And I know you're looking forward particularly to that performance of Billy Budd's team.
I am. And I was just thinking, you know, this hall was well underway with its music making before Britain was born. And so 100 years, it's not that long ago that he was born, and you think how he changed British music. It completely changed the way, not just that we think of British composers, but really the whole way that musical life in Britain since the war has changed.
It's really interesting as well. We'll talk more about this with Roger Wright later, but there's a Britain premiere this year, a world premiere of The Elegy for Strings, written in 1928, another thing to look forward to. You did all the Tchaikovsky piano concertos 4 years ago. What was that like as an experience in one season?
It was great. I mean, Tchaikovsky is so alive, and in a sense you have to get to a heightened state of energy, and to do them all was sort of one on top of another on top of another. I think I was quite sort of hysterical by the end of them, but Because the audience at the Proms is so fantastic, and those pieces are such audience pieces, it did add an extra dimension of excitement. And it was great to do two pieces that I think one of them had never been done at the Proms before, maybe the Concert Fantasia or the Third Concerto, the two unusual ones. Number one, of course, done every other year, I presume, more or less. Number two, less often. So it was interesting to do pieces that are not well known, but by a composer who's very, very well known.
And all the Tchaikovsky symphonies in the season this year, all the numbered symphonies plus Manfred, they are extraordinary journeys, aren't they? From sort of feel-good one moment to complete despair another.
But he shows you his heart. This is the thing with Tchaikovsky. You know, nothing's hidden. It's like, come into my house. It's a total mess, but you're welcome. And so I think you become friends with Tchaikovsky as you study his music, as you play his music, and as you listen to his music too.
Well, Vasily Petrenko will be conducting the role Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra in the first symphony. Let's hear him now in the second movement of Tchaikovsky's Manfred Symphony.
Thank you.
The second movement of Tchaikovsky's Manfred Symphony, the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Vasily Petrenko. Manfred here at the Proms, right at the very end of the season, Thursday the 5th of September. Shan Zhang will conduct the Verdi Symphony Orchestra Milan and the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic. And Petrenko, earlier that week, will perform Tchaikovsky's first symphony. All the Tchaikovsky numbered symphonies plus Manfred at the Proms here at the Royal Albert Hall this season. We're live with our Proms preview night from a backstage corridor here. Rehearsals for tomorrow night's first night underway. It's 8:40. And time for another postcard. Stephen Huff, renowned for his sartorial elegance whenever he takes to the concert stage. Like all of us, the Royal Albert Hall likes to look coolly smart during the Proms. Here's Georgia Mann.
The Royal Albert Hall has a Victorian splendour all of its own, and musicians taking part in the Proms tend to have a great affection for the building here and its many idiosyncrasies. It's an impressive looking space, but even one of the world's great 19th century concert halls needs a little help from time to time to look its best during prom season. And the man who makes that happen is Chris Webster, who is the set designer here at the Proms, and he joins me now tucked into one of the loges just next to the auditorium. Chris, the musicians sometimes do talk about the acoustic challenges they face playing here in the Albert Hall. What set of challenges do you face kind of making this place look great for these concerts?
Well, it's twofold, really. And I think, first of all, it starts completely from everything trying not to interfere with the sound and the sort of presence of everything else here. So we did a series of tests at the beginning. We tried to find, I mean, they wanted to add some video wall product or something to give them a more contemporary feel to their backings and things, but it meant we needed to do tests. We set it up, people came out and did sound tests, we checked the material, we found a video wall product that had no fans, so we didn't have to worry about fan noise. Okay. So, and then once we settled on that, then we needed to make sure we left enough space for the choir right at the beginning, because obviously first night, last night, big choirs. And then we went from there, and then looking, that was mainly sort of the stage stuff. Then we looked at the wider picture beyond and said, right, well, the area left and right of the organ were quite bland, so we've put in some gauzes there, and we've taken elements of architecture from the hall and tried to duplicate those in a style that was fitting. And then finally we made a very brave move, and we removed the fountain, and we put in this very large graphic which goes on the floor.
And what have you decided alongside the TV team, because I presume that you must be certainly working very, very closely with them all the time. How have you gone about deciding a look for this year?
Well, that was put in motion probably about 3 years ago, and every so often they then repitch the whole concept and they ask a series of designers to pitch ideas about how we would take it a step probably more modern than what they've had before, slightly more contemporary. I guess I'm responsible for removing the flowers from the front of stage and replacing it with a series of light bulbs.
Flower thief.
I know. So, guilty.
Chris Webster, designer of the stage and the decorations here at the Royal Albert Hall, talking with Georgia Mann. Stephen Huff and Mary King are here. Now, piano concertos by the dozen, well, not quite, but not far off two dozen here in the 2013 BBC Proms season. Beethoven, Rachmaninoff, Prokofiev, Glazunov II, Ravel, Britten, Arnold, Shostakovich amongst the works this year. What's it like, Stephen, to play in as a pianist, the Royal Albert Hall?
I love playing here because it's immense, of course. It's 6,000 people here, which is three times the number of most large concert halls. But on stage, it feels intimate. It's very strange. You don't feel like you're playing in a vast sort of arena like you might at the Hollywood Bowl, where the sound, you don't know where it's going. You do actually feel that the sound has an intimacy to it here, and you sense the audience all around. And of course, the Prommers are really so close you could almost reach out and shake someone's hand. So it's a sort of strange irony that it's an intimate place to play.
One of the tasks you've got to do this evening, along with chatting with us, is select the piano that you're going to play Rachmaninoff and Lutosławski on tomorrow.
Yes, as soon as they finish with the C symphony, I'll be on stage looking at that, yeah.
How many instruments to choose from?
I don't know. It's completely, I'm just hoping there's something nice.
What are you going to be looking for? I mean, what makes the perfect piano?
Well, these two pieces are very sparkling, so I'm looking for a piano that's bright, that's crisp and clean, but it also has a sort of lyricism, because Rachmaninoff always has lyricism. He never wrote a piece that didn't have his heart somewhere on his sleeve. But the Lutoslavsky, a lot of it sounds very percussive. And in fact, in this orchestration, you hear the percussion imitating the piano. So you'll have a xylophone playing something that the piano has just played. So I want a piano that can sound like a xylophone, but also that can sing.
You played the Rachmaninoff, I think, twice before, at least here at the Proms. Lutoslavsky is completely new to you this year.
It's a new piece this year, yeah.
Well, we look forward to hearing it tomorrow night. Mary, a highlight or two of the piano concertos on offer this year?
Well, I'm just excited at the moment of just imagining that I could one day wake up and say, what instrument will I choose today? I think I'll be Joyce DiDonato. so that's all I'm thinking about. But for me, what's wonderful about piano concertos is nobody sings. So that sounds terrible, but I find piano concertos particularly relaxing. I don't know why that is. And Beethoven's Fourth is on the menu, which
Mitsuko Ujida.
Absolutely fantastic. And Mendelssohn, which Stephen's playing. And I'm curious about Zhevsky and this Malcolm Arnold piece, which is for three players. Well, three hands. What am
three
I saying?
Hands. It's written, three Stephen, three for one of the great piano duos of the 20th century.
Yes, Cyril Smith and Phyllis Selick. They were a married couple. Cyril Smith lost the use of his left hand. And
he had been much admired by Rachmaninoff.
Apparently, he used to play Rachmaninoff, and Rachmaninoff loved his playing. I think he talked about him as that Englishman that he admired so much. But he lost the use of his left hand, and I think a number of composers wrote music for him, including the Malcolm Arnold Concerto for Three Hands. It's wonderful. I love this program. You have Bantok and Elgar and Walton and Coates. Something really only the Proms can do. Here you have a festival that could not be more sophisticated in its choice of music, and yet there's no shame and embarrassment about putting on a concert of marvellous English chestnuts like this.
Wednesday the 31st of July, the date of that concert, and that's being broadcast live on Radio 3 and on Radio 2 as well. Barry Wordsworth will conduct the BBC Concert Orchestra. I know, Stephen, briefly you're looking forward to Glazunov 2. I read somewhere he used to love playing with a cigar between his third and fourth fingers.
I'd not heard that. Maybe it would affect the figuration somewhat. I should take a look at the score. Yeah, fantastic. It's with Gergiev and with Daniel Trifonov is playing that. So wonderful to hear an unknown piece. I think even the first Glazunov is more played than the second, so it's obscure even for an obscure genre.
Well, let's hear you playing Mendelssohn. You'll be playing the Mendelssohn Piano Concerto No. 1 with the Scottish Chamber Orchestra on August the 19th. Here's the last movement. Thank you. The last movement of Mendelssohn's first piano concerto, played by Stephen Huff, the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Lawrence Foster. Stephen plays that work on the 19th of August here at the Proms with the Scottish Chamber Orchestra and Robin Ticciati conducting. Some lovely sounds echoing around our backstage corridor here at the Royal Albert Hall as rehearsals continue for a C symphony. The Royal Albert Hall organ has just been blaring out loudly. There's 400 plus voices, and right at the front of the stage, Sally Matthews and Roderick Williams, the two soloists to C Symphony in the second half of tomorrow night's first night. Zachary Oromo making his debut as chief conductor of the BBC Symphony Orchestra. Now, if you circumnavigate your way around the Royal Albert Hall, because it's a circle, at some point you will come to a little encampment of outside broadcast trucks where the sound is balanced to ensure Radio 3 listeners get the best seat in the house and where pictures are cut together for television Proms on BBC 1, 2, 3 and 4, all under the watchful eye of a dedicated couple who will spend the entire prom season camped outside. Here's Georgia Mann.
Parked up in the midst of the little army of mobile homes and trucks outside the back of the Royal Albert Hall is a camper van. The residents of said van, John Davies and Jenny Kelly, are the security duo who are here for the whole duration of the season, keeping an eye on all those who dwell in the little truck village here. I'm going to show them my pass and hopefully gain access to the camper van. Hello.
Hello,
Jenny. Thank you very much. Can I come in? I'm just going to squeeze in. Oh, wow. John and Jenny, I hear tell that you are going to be in residence in this van for the whole prom season. Can this be true?
Unfortunately, it is.
Just tell me what your key role is, keeping an eye, presumably, on this absolute kind of encampment of trucks and kit.
It's just simply the OB. It's just all the OB vehicles that are in the two compounds. TV vision on this side and Radio 3 over on the other side.
And have you had any moments where you've had a worrying moment last season when you were here? Well, generally speaking, was it all pretty much straightforward?
No, it wasn't last year. No, last year was probably the only incident, real incident, we've ever had. Now, I normally go to bed between 7 o'clock in the evening and about 2 in the morning. I was just getting up at around about 2 o'clock. Jenny had been outside. She suddenly came to the door and said, "I've got an incident." She had a chap in the radio compound. And so she went out. She was trying to sort of talk him out, but she went on the phone to the police and, of course, did a 999 saying that she was calling from door 11 of the Royal Albert Hall. Well, it was like Keystone Cops. I mean, they came from everywhere. Wow. They locked down every single road. The whole of the Royal Albert Hall went into complete lockdown. We had police dog handlers. We also had a helicopter and everything here, all for one drunk, who eventually ended up underneath the Radio 3 sound truck. And the only way the police could get him out was one policeman to go in and get hold of the man by his legs. And then that took another two policemen to get hold of the policeman's legs, one on each leg, and literally pull him out.
Now, I do hear that your predecessors, who were inhabited a camper van in the same way that you guys are for the whole season, and you both do a fantastic line in Bacon Sarnies. Is this true?
I believe so, yes.
Is that your job, John?
Yes, I do. I do the cooking. Jenny does the making up of the bacon baps in the morning. And unfortunately, you're a day too early.
Very good they are too. You can have an egg as well for an extra 50 pence. Roger Wright, Proms director, may or may not be one of those enjoying a bacon butty first thing tomorrow. I certainly will. Wanted to talk, Roger, about new music at the Proms this year because 18 world premieres, is that right?
If you say so. It's always been, I think, a key part of what the Proms is about, this business of not only brand new work, but also work new to the UK. So, yes, we've got world premieres, we've got the BBC commissions, but also pieces which we're bringing which have not been heard in the UK before. And, you know, Henry Wood was this huge champion of new work, so that's just a tradition continued.
Well, you start with a spectacular from Thomas Addis next Wednesday.
Well, of course, what's important is, in a way, we start tomorrow with Julian Anderson. And that then has a reflection in The Last Night with Anna Klein. And yet, I mean, Tom Addis's piece is going to be, you know, one of the most significant new pieces this year because of its size and scale. This song cycle, or piece at least, for two singers, Simon Kinley-Side and Christiana Stortein, and Tom himself conducting the BBC Symphony Orchestra. A big new sort of 35-40 minute piece.
Helmut Lachenmann, new to the Proms.
I was astonished that Lachenmann had never been performed at the Proms before, but I suppose, you know, it does happen. I mean, his extraordinary sort of sonic imagination, this piece in this case for string quartet, the Arditis and orchestra, and will be a real sort of ear tickler. He just plays with orchestral sonorities and draws an audience in.
It's not all absolute cutting-edge new material either. For example, Benjamin Britten writing in 1928, but only now getting a premiere.
Yes, it's happened to a number of Britten pieces.
That's the rehearsal, I think, just finishing, by the way, for C Symphony. Applause if you can hear it in the background.
It's happened to a number of Britten pieces since his death, that these pieces, because he was such an amazing writer, both if you've seen those diaries and letters, but also of music from an early age. I think this piece was written when he was about 14, had just started studying with Bridge. And of course, you know, he became a supreme writer of string music, and I think Bridge himself had probably suggested this string orchestral piece. It's a single movement, and it'll be intriguing to actually have it unlocked. And, you know, we shouldn't overclaim for these pieces, but it does actually help fill out some of the territory of music which is more familiar.
And another missed piece, as it were, by a South African British-based composer, written in the early 1950s.
Priya Renier. Yes, this is part, I think, of telling the Britten story. It's really important, I think, in celebrating somebody like Britten, whose music is not neglected after all. We've decided to take the opportunity to celebrate Britten partly by telling the story around him, not least of his contemporaries, and, you know, whether that be Lennox Barclay, whether it be Walton, whether it be Elizabeth McConkie, and these are very important figures. Priya Renier is somebody whose music's almost completely forgotten, and yet was a significantly supported by the Proms, and this is again a piece for string orchestra, a very, very distinctive voice, and there's a rather nice Britten connection particularly in that she wrote a number of pieces for Peter Pears.
Julian Anderson's piece that opens the whole season tomorrow, I think he's decided to dedicate to Dutier, who died in May. Also much missed, another composer who died that same month, Steve Martland, who was very much part of the Proms, not just as a composer, but also as part of the broadcasting of the Proms, a familiar figure in the BBC 4 television coverage of the Proms. And you've put a piece of his in to mark his passing.
Yes, I mean, it's just one of those things that one would never have expected to have to do, but seems entirely right and proper, particularly as this is part of the Six Music Prom. We've asked the London Sinfonietta to play Steve's Principia. And you know, not having that extraordinary energetic presence, both, you know, as a composer, but as you've just said, as a figure, as a commentator, as somebody who will challenge ideas, and just with this extraordinary passion, I can't quite believe that he's still not with us. And so it seemed, you know, just one of those things, as sometimes has to happen in Proms planning, to respond to that particular sort of tragic event by playing this extraordinary energetic music, which has its own Radio 3 connection because it was used as one of our signature tunes.
Well, let's hear it now, played by the Steve Martland Band. Thank you. Principia by Steve Martland, the much-missed Steve Martland, played by the Steve Martland Band, and that's part of the Six Music Prom on Monday the 12th of August, late night. It's going to be quite an event, that. Keris Matthews and Anna Stephanie on stage, Stranglers and the London Symphonietta, presented jointly by Steve Lamack of Six Music and our own Tom Service, introducing different styles of music to each other. 10 o'clock on Monday the 12th of August. If you can hear a bit of noises off, our BBC Proms Youth Choir are on the move again. Singers from the Halle Youth Choir, the CBSO from Northern Ireland, from Wales as well. They've finished their rehearsal of a Sea Symphony, which we'll hear them perform. And it promises to be spectacular indeed. In the first night of the Proms, coverage starting 7:30 tomorrow night here on Radio 3. Now, we mentioned the encampment of broadcasting vehicles outside the Royal Albert Hall. One of those is where the Radio 3 sound is balanced. But before our team of skilled tonmeisters get to mix their sounds, they have to hang their microphones. Back to Georgia Mann.
I've come down into the depths of the backstage area at the Royal Albert Hall, which is bustling with men and women bearing cables left, right and centre, to meet sound balancer Sue Thomas, one of the women responsible for getting the Prom sounding as good as it can. So we've seen these enormous slings, as they're called, which look a bit like sort of tight ropes to me, going across the auditorium, and that enables you and your team to suspend these microphones up in the air. What exactly are you trying to achieve with that?
Well, the best place to put microphones looking at a large orchestra on stage would be somewhere in the air. The microphones themselves are not terribly high, it has to be said, but the slings are suspended from quite high up in the auditorium. And it's just a question of finding the right space to put the main mics for the main concerts.
And what happens with the pieces that you're completely unfamiliar with? I mean, what about, you know, the likes of a Julian Anderson premiere, which we're going to be having on the first night? I mean, what happens when you've never come across a piece of music before and you've got to try and get your head round balancing that?
Well, the very first thing is I would try to get to a rehearsal, or at the very least look at the score. I couldn't possibly begin to even plan it if I hadn't the score in front of me. And then when I hear it, I will always have an immediate idea as to how I'm going to reproduce that for the radio, because the hearing is the information for me. When I hear the piece of music, I think that's how it needs to be heard on the radio, or even if I put mics here, I can make it a bit better for the listeners at home, that sort of thing.
Has there ever been a time when you've just thought, I cannot do this, this is really ridiculous, how am I going to make this sound right?
No.
Radio 3 star music balancer Sue Thomas talking to Georgia Mann, making that sound perfect for listeners to Radio 3 at home and around the world now via the magic of the internet. It's 9:08. We're live at the Royal Albert Hall this night before the Proms, Proms Eve. Let's talk a little bit about British music, a bit of due declaration. As chairman of the Lennox Barclay Society, I'm particularly proud that there are two of his works in the Proms this year. We also have with us the patron of the Granville Bantock Society, Stephen Huff.
Hello. Well... But actually,
tell us
about
Granville Bantock.
Well, you know, it's awful. I've recorded two pieces of his. In fact, one piece twice. Song to the Seals, I recorded with Robert White in the original
Great American
version.
Irish American tenor.
And I did a transcription myself, which I also recorded. But I don't know a lot about him, but all I know is that everything I've heard of his has that kind of interesting Celtic ring. It doesn't sound like anyone else. And so I was asked whether I'd like to be the patron, and I was intrigued enough to say yes, thinking that this is my chance to learn more about him. So maybe this summer is a further chance to explore Bantock.
Well, plenty of his music in the Proms. Five works, three of them, the Sapphic Poem, The Witch of Atlas and the Celtic Symphony, get their Proms premieres this year. Mary, have you got a British music highlight or two?
Not really, apart from, I suppose, the Midsummer Marriage, the Tippet. I'm thrilled that it's being done. It's not done very often because it's incredibly difficult, I think. And I'm really excited about that.
It was done at the Royal Opera House and was something of a failure. It was, I think, a BBC broadcast,
though Joan Sutherland was in the initial cast.
BBC broadcast in 1960 that sort of launched the work into greater popularity. Mm. But it is a neglected piece, isn't it?
Yes, I don't know why it doesn't get done more often. I think that's true about all of his operas, actually.
Well, it's a pivotal piece for me, actually, because in my teens, I bought the records, and I fell
in
love with this piece. No, this was the one with Alberto Remedios singing Mark, I think it is. Mm. I can't remember who sings Jennifer. But I was doing yoga and burning joss sticks on my bedroom floor, age about 13, listening to The Midsummer Marriage, and it was life-changing, really. I think one of the reasons, to be honest, it's not done, is it's a little silly, the story. The libretto has some, now maybe dated enough, lines that have a certain kind of 60s, 70s, hippie-ish ring.
He did the libretto
them.
Himself, didn't he?
Yeah, and this is, in a sense, a shame. Mm. He did all these librettos himself and these storylines. But really, I mean, one shouldn't say this, but if you can just sort of put the words slightly to one side and enjoy the music, it is music of a kind of freshness. It's magical. It's ecstatic.
And the
it's
dancers,
lyrical.
The dancers
are fabulous.
Sublime.
Well, we're going to hear the prelude and the first dance right now. It's Andrew Davis and the BBC Symphony Orchestra who perform it here at the Proms on Friday the 16th of August. Here they are, Prelude and First Dance. first dance, and before it, the prelude from Sir Michael Tippett's Midsummer Marriage, the BBC Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Andrew Davis, Paul Groves, Erin Wall, Eilish Tynan, Alan Clayton, Catherine Wynne Rogers, amongst the cast for the Proms performance of the opera with the BBC singers, BBC Symphony Chorus, and Andrew Davis and the orchestra on Friday, the 16th of August. Zachary Oramo on stage here at the Royal Albert Hall. Last minutes of this rehearsal for the first night of the Proms. They're just working with the BBC Symphony Chorus now on Harmony, the new work by Julian Anderson that will open tomorrow night's concert. On the subject of opera, nine operas at the Proms this year: Midsummer Marriage, Billy Budd from Glyndebourne. The rest are by Wagner. Mary King, are you a Wagner enthusiast?
Now, you know, Petrock, that this is not my favourite music. However, I do think that it is absolutely fantastic to hear so much done in the Proms this year, because you know you can't go to this number of Wagner pieces, Wagner operas in this space of time, you know, with these casts. It's absolutely incredible.
And it is, I mean, we talked a lot about this, but it is an amazing opportunity, isn't it? I mean, to be able to hear a Ring Cycle with Baron Boehm, the first time he's ever done a Ring Cycle in the UK, the first time the Proms has done it, and you know, seats are pretty much gone, but you can still come and prom for £5 if you want to have the experience. It is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Absolutely, and Tristan and Parsifal. I mean, that's what I think is fantastic.
Yeah, and actually, I'm particularly interested in those two, because I think that of all the Wagner operas, maybe they need the staging and the costumes least.
Well, I think Tristan, in many ways, is a chamber piece. I mean,
yeah. And Parsifal seems to me like a great oratorio. You see the influence on a piece like The Dream of Gerontius in that piece. And I think it's fantastic to be able to hear those, in a sense, in a concentrated way, without the creaks of the stage and the slightly awkward costume sometimes that you have. That you can listen to those pieces in a pure form and see the orchestra. Because what Wagner's doing with the orchestra is so wonderful.
Absolutely.
The orchestration, you can watch that drama, not so much the drama of the ancient myths.
And it's interesting that these performances come from orchestras who have already been performing them. This fashion that's happened in recent years, the Halle with Mark Elder, the BBC Scottish with Donald Runicles, to perform acts from these great operas. It's the Halle doing Parsifal, Tannhäuser from the BBC Scottish, Tristan and Isolde from the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and Semyon Bychkov. They are becoming more common currency as concert works, aren't they?
Yeah, I suppose they are. And what better Wagnerian backdrop than the Albert Hall? I mean, Wagner, this is even bigger than Wagner could have built. And I think to see these works in this this setting, you don't need the spears and the dragons.
And also sometimes, you know, the cumbersome physicality of the acting, which I think you have to admit in many productions, does get in the way of the drama sometimes. I think the drama is in the music. That's what I feel. So to me, it doesn't detract too much.
Well, not just because it's a Cornish legend, but if I had to pick one, it would be Tristan and Isolde. I think you might agree with that, Stephen.
I would have Parsifal slightly ahead, but my goodness, Tristan's a very close second.
Well, we're going to hear Violetta Ermana, who will sing Isolde here at the Proms, but from a recording made in 2000 where she is Brangaena, with Tony Papano and the orchestra of the Royal Opera House. Brangaena singing Unseen from the Tower, You Upon Whom Love's Dreams Smiles.
Thank you.
Violetta Ermana singing Brangaena in Wagner's Tristan and Isolde with the orchestra at the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden, conducted by Antonio Pappano. She will sing Isolde in Tristan and Isolde here at the Proms on Saturday, the 27th of July. Julian Anderson's opening piece for tomorrow night's first night has gained in its volume, as you can probably hear. We'll hear that 7:30 tomorrow night here on Radio 3, and then Stephen Huff will be playing the Rachmaninoff Paganini variations, and then Luta Swaski's interpretation of Paganini to follow. Mentioned Antonio Pappano, he brings his Santa Cecilia Orchestra to the Proms on Saturday week. They are considered to be one of the world's best orchestras these days. They bring an all-Verdi programme, and the night before they'll be performing Mozart, Schumann and Rachmaninoff. That's a week tomorrow. Now, so much of the Proms is about logistics, getting musicians in the right place to rehearse and perform, making sure they have their music. Georgia Mann has been to the BBC studios at Maida Vale, home of the BBC Symphony Orchestra.
I'm here to find out what goes on in a little office just to the right-hand side as you come through the doors, where Julia Simpson, who is orchestral librarian, is responsible for feeding musical scores into the giant engine that is the Proms and keeping it ticking over nicely. Let's pay her a visit. Julia, you've got to get those music scores onto the right music stands at the right time. Give us an idea of the sheer scale of the task, because there's quite a few concerts to be thinking about with the Symphony Orchestra this year.
Yeah, we're doing 11 of the Proms, including the first night and the last night. Each of the Proms has maybe three or four pieces, apart from the operas, which is obviously just one piece, but they're huge. Like, a first violin part is 81 pages.
Whoa.
So if it's full strings, there are 30 string parts, and there are 30 wind parts just about as well. So then we're talking about 60 parts for each piece. And then if there's, like, on the first night, there's five pieces, so do the maths.
Thinking in terms of, obviously, the musicians get these things on the music stands, they read the music, but they have to be marked up in a certain way. And is that also part of your job?
That's a huge part of our job, especially the strings, because we have to put bowing marks in every single string part. So if you are watching an orchestra and you see that the bows are always going up and down together, that's because we've gone through every single part and written bowing marks on every single note.
Now, I have heard, Julia, I've heard tell about a giant box living in the lobby here. Let's see this box. Beneath photographs of various musical luminaries who have graced us here, we've got Sir Adrian Bolt, we've got Sir Malcolm Sargent, Sir Colin Davis, all looking on at the mythical box, keeping guard over it, Julia. So it is giant, this is large, and let's get inside it, let's see.
So there are these big catches. We open up the box, and basically there's these big areas that we put the wind and the strings, and then there's a drawer that's got all our stationery. We put a little sticker on the top that says the date and where it's going to go, because we've got two boxes and we wouldn't want to turn up at the Albert Hall and the wrong ones.
No, that would be tragic.
The wrong music. But generally, I'm just about 100%, it's always all there.
Julia, thanks so much.
I think only 100% will do. Thank you very much indeed, our reporter, Georgia Mann. It's 28 minutes past nine, which means that we are 2 minutes away from the end of the orchestral rehearsal for tomorrow's first night at the Proms. Orchestral rehearsals always start and finish to the second, and Stephen Huff will be leaving us then to go and select a piano for Luta Swaski and for Rachmaninoff tomorrow evening. Thank you very much indeed, Stephen, for being with us. Perhaps some thoughts before we let you go. First of all, about the magic of the Proms. We mentioned that it was back in 1985 that you made your debut. I guess the Proms were with you as a lover of music long before that.
In a way, although not living in London, it's not quite as easy just to go to a prom.
They're on Radio 3.
Well, were they back then? I suppose they were. But I was listening to Led Zeppelin and being a misbehaved young man. But
I'm watching Coronation Street.
Watching
we read in the Evening Standard
too. But yes. But no, it's fantastic to come back to the Proms. It's almost like one's life is measured in Proms, because the summer begins again, and now the memories come back as I came to the stage door tonight. Memories of earlier nights and of leaving after a concert and of going with friends to have dinners. I think there's a wonderful sense of a social occasion when so many people are gathered in a space to listen to music and then leave that space It's a great sense of community. We're back to a feeling of the medieval village, at least for one evening.
There is a kind of a bit of a love-in between the audience, isn't there? Which is why, and I, for me, that moment when there is a roar, there's a buzz, applause of a level louder than you ever get in a classical concert anywhere else, when you as the artist walk on stage, and then this incredibly intense listening.
Yeah, the silence. And that really is the greatest gift to a performer, is that intense listening when you're playing or singing, and someone and people are listening in an active way. Because being really quiet is not about being passive and falling asleep. It's about being on the edge of your seat listening, but with barely being able to breathe.
Let me ask you for a few favourites from the season. I think we've already had one of them, Midsummer Marriage.
Yeah, Midsummer Marriage is a real highlight for me. My blind date, though, this year, my wild card, is the sitar concerto, which Nishat Khan is playing and has written, called The Gate of the Moon. That's on the 12th of August. I have no idea what that piece will sound like, and so I'm very intrigued. And it's a substantial work. I think it's at least half an hour. So I'm hoping either to come along or to tune in.
And it's paired alongside Ray Vaughan Williams' London Symphony. So a wonderful combination of music old and new. That's on Monday, the 12th of August. The members of the BBC Symphony Chorus are done. They're walking past at the end of our corridor, which means we must send you off to choose a piano.
Right, off I go.
We'll probably hear you in the background in a few minutes' time. Thank you very much indeed, Stephen Huff, for being with us. Let's just talk about Cadogan Hall a second. Home to chamber music every Monday lunchtime, and a fair few Saturday concerts there as well, including some of our great chamber orchestras, the Academy of Ancient Music, Britain Symphonia, from overseas Camerata Ireland and Camerata Nordica. Sarah Connolly will be singing Britain, and Lennox Barclay, Barry Douglas will be playing Britain's Young Apollo. The 24th of August is a concert featuring the English Chamber Orchestra, who will hear now, conducted by Britain in 1968, playing the composer's Prelude and Fugue, a work written a quarter of a century earlier. Britain himself conducting the English Chamber Orchestra in his Prelude and Fugue. That work will be performed by the Britain Symphonia, conducted by Sian Edwards at Cadogan Hall. And one of our proms, Saturday Matinees, on Sunday the 3rd of August. Music by Holst, Lennox Barclay and Tippett also on the programme. Now, the centenary of the Polish composer Lutosławski gives the opportunity for a big celebration of Polish music at the proms this year. Gorecki's Third Symphony, Penderecki's Concerto Grosso, Szymanowski's Third Symphony and Violin Concerto amongst the works that will feature. Stephen Huff, who you can probably hear warming up and deciding what piano he's going to play, will be performing Lutosławski's Variations on a Theme of Paganini at tomorrow night's first night of the proms. Perform, first of all, as a piano duet by Lutosławski in wartime Poland with his friend Andrzej Panufnik. Panufnik's music features here as well this season. We're going to hear next an orchestral work he wrote in 1944, Perform, but then a few months later, the score was destroyed by a fire during the uprising in Warsaw against the Nazis. Panufnik recreated it in 1955, and the Warsaw Philharmonic will perform it at the proms on August 23rd. The Tragic Overture, performed by the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Jascha Horenstein. Thank you. Panufnik's tragic overture, Jascha Horenstein conducting the London Symphony Orchestra, that performed by the Warsaw Philharmonic, conducted by Antoni Witt here at the Proms on Friday the 23rd of August. We've had a weird musical mashup here in our backstage corridor of Panufnik in one ear and Stephen Huff playing Lutosławski in the other ear. Mary King, before we let you go, a couple of last thoughts from you about the Proms. The last night seems an awfully long way away, but let's just touch on it. Maren Ulsop making her last night debut and the first time ever a female conductor.
Not before time, and she's wonderful. She's a perfect choice, I think. Her last night programme is wild and wonderful, with the Chichester Psalms of Bernstein and Vaughan Williams next to each other, and with Joyce DiDonato singing, of course. So that is a really special programme.
And they've done some wonderful, for anyone coming to the Royal Albert Hall, some wonderful posters around the corridor of highlights of the Proms. There's an enormous picture of Joyce DiDonato and there's an enormous picture of Maren Ulsop, and they're fantastic pictures, really, really worth seeing. It does seem to have been a long time coming, but that's got to start changing, hasn't it, female conductors?
I think so. And Maren's also doing a wonderful programme earlier on in the season when she's doing the German Requiem of Brahms, which is also Brahms and Schumann that night.
And
fantastic.
One more highlight from you, a great Verdian at the Proms.
Absolutely. Well, Tony Papano is bringing his orchestra and choir to do an all Verdi programme. Remember, it's his 200th anniversary as well as Wagner's. And they're doing the four sacred pieces, which are absolutely astonishing choral pieces, which I'm really looking forward to.
I sense you might have argued for a Verdi opera.
I would have liked to have two. I would have liked to have Don Carlos, actually, and Falstaff, of course, which is the greatest of them all, in my opinion.
Well, maybe that's another year. thank you, Mary King, very much for being with us this evening. Thank you to all of my guests, Stephen Huff, Zachary Ormo, Roger Wright. Thank you as well to our our reporter Georgia Mann, who we'll be hearing much more of during the proms season. She's going to be running Proms Plus Lates. So if you're coming to a prom and there's one of those, make sure you hang around, have a drink and listen to some late night music. Stephen Huff, sounds like he hasn't quite made his selection yet. He will be on stage tomorrow night, 7:30, as will the BBC Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Sakari Oromo. I will be here to introduce the first night of the proms at 7:30. We leave you with Laudi alla Vergine from Verdi's Four Sacred Pieces, the Swedish Radio Choir, Stockholm Chamber Choir, Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by Riccardo Muti. For now, from the Royal Albert Hall, very good night to you.
Music by Verdi, the third of his four sacred pieces, Laudi alla Vergine. Riccardo Muti conducted the Stockholm Chamber Choir and the Swedish Chamber Choir. And you can hear all four of those sacred pieces live at the Proms on Saturday the 20th of July at 7:30, or of course live here on the home of the BBC Proms, Radio 3. Tonight's Proms preview was presented live from where it will all take place from tomorrow night by Petroc Trelawney, and it was produced by Anthony Sellers. And Petroc will be there, as he said, in the Radio 3 box, guiding you through that first prom at 7:30 tomorrow evening. Well, in a moment, Boris Johnson explains how history has played such a part in his career in tonight's edition of Night Waves. And then, in an hour from now, Nick Luscombe will be here in the studio, bringing you the results of a collaboration between the pianist John Tilbury and the late avant-garde guitarist Derek Bailey. Just one of the features in tonight's edition of Late Junction at 11.
To the Spanish guitarist Francisco Tárrega, the guitar in the hands of an Englishman was almost blasphemy, an attitude still prevalent after the Second World War, when a boy born in Battersea had the fanciful idea of becoming a professional guitarist.
And I knew from the age of 12, and people would either have to put up with it or go home.
Quite possibly the most influential classical guitarist of the second half of the 20th century, BBC Radio 3 celebrates the life and career of Julian Bream.
My music went flying all over the place. Somebody came up to help, and it was Benjamin Britten. I recognised him.
Saturday lunchtime at 12:15 on BBC Radio 3.
Provocative conversation next on Radio 3. It's time for Night Waves, presented by Anne McElvoy.
Night Waves brings you a warning from history tonight as Boris Johnson tells me what ancient Roman and contemporary conservative politics have in common. And director Sarah Frankham explains what connects Shelley's epic account of the Peterloo Massacre to street revolts in Egypt today. Our new generation thinker John Gallagher has been rootling in 16th century phrase books for travellers and will be considering the miserable middle-class holiday movie from Rossellini's Voyage to Italy to Joanna Hogg's Archipelago and now Julie Delpy in Before Midnight.
The truth is, OK, you failed the test. And the fact is, you would not pick me up on a train. You would not even notice me, a fat-ass middle-aged mom losing her hair.
OK.
Yeah, that's me.
You set me up to fail.
More on the holiday wars later. London's Mayor Boris Johnson has an enviably eclectic reputation for a politician as author, newspaper columnist and enthusiast for the ancient world. In his second term at City Hall, he's published a book on London which praises another ambitious Johnson, Samuel, along with Keith Richards and Churchill as some of his heroes. Some gossips in the Tory ranks mischievously venture that the present Mr. Johnson might like the association with the other big names because he's got his eye on power in his own party one day. To dig into that and the influence of history on one of today's most prominent politicians, I caught up with that famous blonde mop at the Daily Mail Chalk Valley History Festival in Wiltshire, where I asked Boris Johnson about his latest writing project, a biography of Churchill. Did he share the great man's quest for the leadership of his party?
No, I was just very lucky because the Churchill estate came to me and they said that they'd read a chapter in another book I'd done that was a bit about Churchill, and they wanted to amplify that and to do a book to coincide with the 50th anniversary of his death. And I jumped at it because they're going to help me with research. They've got lots of we've got access to all the papers, and the thing I want to look at is. And it's going well, and it's interesting me a great deal, is those moments when Churchill's character and his nature really impacted on events. Churchill's unlike almost anybody else in our time and in the modern era, in that he was so huge and he impacted for such a long time, 65 years or more. He interfaced with, if I can use a terrible word, he engaged with, like a gigantic cog, he engaged with the flywheel of world events, and he turned those events in all sorts of different ways. And wherever you, I mean, look at what's happening in Syria. He was in the colonial office when they were drawing up the whole map of the Middle East.
The reason that he was able to play such a, if you can play a decisive role in a flywheel, to mix a metaphor, was because he was also a great quester for power. And this is sometimes said of you, that you are someone who, once you have some powers, Mayor of London, you have some at the moment, but you want some more and you won't stop until you get it, including going on to try and head your party.
The appetite for power is absolutely glutted by being Mayor of London. I cannot tell you, Anne, you know, you and I have talked many, many times about politics, but there's something absolutely wonderful about being Mayor of London. You can genuinely do stuff that nobody else can do. You can do it fast, and you can see the results of what you've done quite fast. And London is the most fantastic city in the world, and I think it's getting, in some ways, better the whole time. There are lots of problems, there are lots of difficulties. I'm like lots of people, I'm, I suppose, intellectually, you know, curious and restless and want to get on with things. But the job of being mayor is very engrossing. And I don't think I've worked as hard or been so absolutely devoted to something since I was 16 and getting ready for A-levels. I remember going into an absolute sort of trance of work. And that's what it's a bit like that, being mayor of London.
A trance of work being mayor of London, that hard. But do you see yourself in a tradition of political performers? A lot of people here at the festival, but also out there in the country, see you as a great performer. What sort of expectations does that create? And does that put you in a tradition of history's great political showman? Any risks to that too?
Yeah, the risk is, of course, that you just have something incredibly dull to say, and people are expecting you to come up with a joke. And so you turn up at an event, and people are, I can see people hungering for the birth of the joke, and they're waiting like midwives or staff in an operating room, waiting for me to produce this thing, and nothing comes. They look absolutely babbling, and I simply say something completely reasonable.
And they're looking for this Russell Brand of politics.
And they want the gag, and the gag doesn't come because there isn't a gag sometimes, and that is you got to live with that.
So yeah, I was going to say, what is the answer to that? Or is the worry
the
in your mind?
The answer to that is sometimes to have the wit to be dull, to go for the dare to be dull.
But are you worried it makes you seem unserious?
This, like this interview, we could just dull it down until people go into a coma.
We can't do that at this time of night on the radio.
Sorry,
don't
go into coma.
Terrible
stay
idea.
Stay awake, it's all right.
No, is your worry then that you end up being seen as fantastically erudite, fun to be around, fun to listen to on the radio, watch on television, but not serious enough for the top job?
I don't care about that, because after all, as I say, being mayor is unbelievably full of difficult executive decisions that you have to take the whole time, and I really don't have enough time to worry about that kind of thing. I've got almost three more years as mayor. It's 2 years, 11 months. It's a long time. You can get a lot done in that period, and I want to do that.
Now, let's turn back to history for a minute. You're pretty unapologetic about your view in your writings that the great men school of history comes through. A few women, but not so many.
I know. That's a I agree. It was hard in the London story to find the right women. And perhaps if I had my time again, I might. We had Boudicca, we had Florence Nightingale, we had Mary Seacole. I did introduce great, great female characters. But I think if I had my time again, I'd do more.
Her story.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think there's I think the history of our age will be very different, very different. And I think you will see, you know, there are extraordinary things now happening in politics around the world which are being driven by women.
The other point that I wanted to get to, really, was that you like the sort of great man view of history. Of course, there are other interpretations. Do you find yourself, for instance, reading Marxist historians?
I of course. And I'm, you know... Geoffrey Hill or Christopher Hill, rather, and Geoffrey de Sainte-Croix or whatever I read. There are loads of Marxist historians who I have a great respect for. I think the Marxian analysis of history is very powerful. I just don't think it's in the end completely convincing. I don't believe that everything is driven by class struggle or by huge economic forces. I genuinely think that it's like what I was saying about Churchill. There can come a moment when a person, a person's energy, a person's views can be decisive.
The role of the politician in public life now is very different from some of the politicians you've reflected on in the past, in more recent history, not so much in the ancient world here. You've been very careful of late not to answer certain questions about your personal life. And we've had a very odd negotiation about this through history, haven't we? We've quite often just pretty much left our leaders alone with their personal life and their foibles. Do you think we have the balance right now, or do you simply think that you really could not get away with that now, the way that